The Ira Kaufman Podcast is presented by Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa and Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon. We are so grateful for all of their presentation of Ira's work at JoeBucksFan.com. Everything, including these twice weekly podcasts that have become so popular on the website, iTunes, Podbean, Google Play, and other platforms. At Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa, during the Instacash trade event, trade up to an XT5. That's right. General Manager Brian Danahy, he is going to give you Instacash when you trade in today, then lease a 2019 luxury XT5 for only $349 a month. $349 a month. That's the beautiful crossover at Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa, just west of 275 on Fletcher. And I'm not telling you to cross over 275. I'm saying it's a crossover vehicle. Beautiful. Check out Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa.com. That's Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa.com. And there are many other offers available during the Instacash event. And also Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon right there on Causeway Boulevard. Up to $18,000 off on remaining 2018 models or 0% APR for 72 months on 2018 XT5s and Escalades. Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon.com is the website. Visit them. Look at all the offers there. We have offers at JoeBucksFan.com. Great opportunities, great dealerships, great partners. Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa, Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon. Now, a little bit different on the podcast today. Lee and Ira are flying solo as I've been busy with Pro Bowl duty. So we'll send you right over to them. They got a lot going on today. A lot of topics, some really good stuff from Ira on Tony Dungy and John Lynch, a little bit deeper on that situation. Of course, the Hall of Fame's around the corner. So enjoy. Here they are.
All right, boys and girls, welcome to the Ira Kaufman Podcast. Sans Steve Isbitz, but the star of the show is here. The one and only King of Newport Richie, the custodian of Canton, the one and only Ira Kaufman. Ira, Steve's not available today. Unfortunately, people got to deal with me kind of being the MC of sorts. Hate to break the news to them that Steve's not here, but you are here, and that's what counts.
I am, and we didn't want to overwork our boy Isbitz Lee. Let's be honest. He spent all day Wednesday in Orlando. Judging from the post that he's throwing out there on Joe Buck's fan, Lee, he talked to everybody except the guy that was selling pretzels, you know, in the concession stand. God bless him. So we didn't want to overwork him. You and I are here at Hooters Thursday morning. We're going to send this over to Steve when we're done. He's going to post it, we hope, today, so it'll be fresh. But we've got our own topics to talk about. I had a little breakfast with Mr. Dungy on Tuesday. I don't know if you read my column about it, Lee, but I had a line in there that I had a quote from Dungy. I said, he said over a recent breakfast, and then the next paragraph I said, and yes, in case you're wondering, Joe Buck's man picked up the tab, Mr. DeKemper. I should amend that to saying I picked up the tab, but you know what? I'll get it back from you boys one way or another with mileage or whatever. It is ways to do. You know, we always used to say that at the trip, Lee, you know, when we spent money out of our own pocket on something, we always would say to each other, we'll make that up in the mileage.
Oh, yeah.
That's the way you do it.
Oh, yeah. I've done it before.
Yeah, done it before, and it happens in a lot of, you don't have to just be a sports writer. There are ways, intangible ways to do it. So anyway, we're here to talk Bucks, Lee. Nice chat with Dungy. Mr. Martin Fennelly was with me that morning. Now, Fennelly gets the Grand Slam breakfast. I get, you know, the...
Egg whites?
No, I got the whole schmear with the bacon strips and everything. I look over at Dungy, you know, he's got like one pancake and alfalfa sprouts and a multi-grain bread and skim milk. I mean, what's going on?
Well, that's why he weighs 90 pounds.
Yeah, I mean, it reminds me of at the NFL owners meetings when Gruden was the coach. You know, we'd go there out to, Phoenix or California or whatever. 7 in the morning, you sit down with the coach for 45 minutes. I'm over there and they got a buffet, of course, for the writers and everything. And we're throwing out, you know, the bacon and the sausage and the syrup on the French toast. And I get back to the table, you know, and here comes Gruden. He's got his plate, you know, and he's got a bran muffin and a banana. I mean, it's making everybody look badly. So, you know, Dungy's into health. And you know, sports writers, for the most part, are not.
Mm-hmm.
You and I included.
Oh, yeah.
Isbitz is a little more health conscious than we are. God bless him.
Yeah, he
is. He's in a little better shape than we are, too. A little bit better.
Yeah, he's a lot better, probably.
I'll still kick his ass on the tennis court.
Yeah.
And if
you've done it before, haven't you?
And if you're listening to this, Isbitz, anytime you want to rematch, you're on. So, Dungy was great. Look, I had a two-pronged mission. I want to talk to about Lynch. Specifically. Very specific. You know, Tony, why didn't he have more than 26 interceptions? That's the only knock you got on the guy. People that didn't see him play. Hey, John Lynch played 15 years. He's got 26 interceptions. Due to math, it's less than two a year. He's playing safety. What's up with that? Well, first of all, he didn't start for the first 3 years. And then you knocked that right out.
Okay.
He didn't start till Dungy came along.
Is that right?
He joined them in 93. He didn't start till 96.
So Sam Weiss didn't start him?
Sam Weiss didn't start him. He didn't know what to do with him. It was sort of like the Bucks with Mark Barron. They don't know what to do with him. Goes to him. So then Dungy comes in and says, This is going to be my Donnie Shell from Pittsburgh. Mm-hmm. Of course, that's what Dungy modeled.
Dungy loves Donnie Shell.
Loves Donnie Shell.
Yeah. He thinks he's being underrated.
Absolutely.
He thinks he should be in the Hall of Fame, right?
And Chuck Knoll was Dungy's mentor.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, when Dungy played for the Steelers, he looked up and he saw Joe Green, Jack Ham, and Donnie Shell, the three key spots of the Tampa 2. When he got to Tampa, he told Sapp, you're going to be my Joe Green.
Who was the white guy, the safety? I can't think of his name. Curly-haired guy?
I don't remember.
He started for like 8 years, so that was not his John Lynch.
No, that was not his John Lynch.
Wow, so, Donnie Shell.
So Dungy was very specific about Lynch's role in that defense. Most of the time, he's a fourth linebacker. How many linebackers are going to get, you know, more than 26 career interceptions? Mm-hmm. Not a lot.
That's true.
Yeah. So a sure tackler, an intimidator.
Mm-hmm.
And Dungy agreed with me. It's hard to quantify intimidation. How many times did a guy short arm a ball over the middle?
Yeah.
It doesn't show up in the stats, Lee.
Mm-hmm.
So he helped me. And then, you know, and I hate to give Izbitz any credit, Lee, but every time we bring up Lynch, Steve always says the same thing. He goes, Ira, I would focus on his 4 years in Denver. And I never really do that. I talk about it a little bit. But Izbitz's point, and Tony backed it up.
Because it's overlooked.
He said when he went to Denver, he went from strong safety to free safety. His role changed, and he showed off different aspects of his game. That is a very strong point in John Lynch's favor, so you can't box him in. As a system guy, he changed systems.
That's a very good point that Izbitz has. You know what? People don't associate him with Denver, even though he played well in Denver.
Ended up in the Ring of Honor.
Please. Yeah, yeah, yeah. But I mean, you know, for example, you don't think of Willie Mays as a Met.
That's
now, I'm
right.
Not saying that Lynch was horrible, but you don't think of Johnny Unitas as a Charger. Guys like that, you know.
Namath ended up with the Rams or something.
Yeah. Now, Sapp, you don't associate him with the Raiders.
That's right.
You associate him with the Bucks. So, and that's just the way it is. Fans, you know, they think of a player at the height of his career, what team he played for, not his last couple of years. So
that's why I'm presenting Lynch instead of the Denver guy. Mm-hmm. The height of the apex of the guy's career.
Who's now, the Denver guy? Kills?
Jeff Legwold from ESPN.
Okay.
Does a nice job. Now, he's presenting Atwater and Champ Bailey. So he's got his hands full in there. And I think he's doing them back-to-back. By the way, the order, I think we talked about it. I'm going 14th out of 15.
Yeah, you're going with that, yeah. Second last.
Which is not a terrible thing if you can make a stronger presentation.
Exactly.
I talked to Brooks on Wednesday because we did the Tampa 2, the Identity. We taped two shows. One was about Lynch, and the other one was our Super Bowl preview. And by the way, we both picked the same team. I won't say who. I was talking to Brooks about Lynch after we did the show. And he was talking about Denver also because he said there's some people in that room that think that having Warren Sapp and Derek Brooks in front of Lynch helped make Lynch the player that he was.
Didn't hurt.
Brooks didn't hurt, but Brooks doesn't think that's fair. And here's his...
That's true.
Here's what he says. He goes, I was blessed. I played in the same system my entire career. Monty Kiffin. Never left Monty Kiffin.
That's true. When Kiffin left, he was done.
He was done. Mm-hmm. Sapp went to Oakland, like you just said. That was a poor career choice by Sapp. He should have went to another team. Oakland was a bad team.
Probably a payday.
That's right. I think Cincinnati wanted him. He spurned them, joined the Raiders. Raiders would go 5-11, three out of his 4 years in Oakland.
He's forgotten in Oakland.
He didn't distinguish himself as a Raider.
No.
But Brooks said, now you look at Lynch. He goes to Denver. He makes four Pro Bowls in 4 years. Some people don't put that much stock in Pro Bowls, but it is what it is.
They don't put backups in the Pro Bowl.
You know, and he makes the Ring of Honor.
Yeah.
So he's using that as a counter-argument that, you know, me and Sapp made John Lynch the player he was. It's all good stuff. Mm-hmm. It's all good stuff.
Yeah, because Brooks and Sapp were not in Denver.
After we got rid of the Lynch stuff, we started talking about Arians. Dungy and Arians were roommates.
Yeah, that's wild.
That's wild. On Schottenheimer's staff. Martin focused in on that. That's all he cared about.
That is the story right then. Yeah. Martin has a good... I'm not saying you don't, but that's good story.
We had a different agenda. You know, I want to know what he thinks of what Arians is going to do with the Bucs and Todd Bowles.
Yeah,
Martin's which is all smart. About personalities. You know, the odd couple. You know, but I mentioned, you know, they shared an apartment in Independence. You know, Missouri. I believe it's a little east of Kansas City.
Yeah, Harry Truman Museum is there.
Yeah. So they had an apartment.
You could walk on his grave, literally.
And this was before their families, you know, they were both married. Dungy was 33, Arians was 36. They had just joined Schottenheimer's staff in 89. Chiefs were pretty good. Steve DeBerg was the quarterback. And before their families got to Kansas City, they shared an apartment. They each had their own bedroom. So I wrote in the column, you know.
Now, that would be even better if they shared a bedroom.
Oh, yeah.
You know, two bunk beds or whatever.
That's a whole other podcast.
That'd be hilarious.
So I wrote that while Dungy was in his bedroom studying the Bible, mm-hmm. Arians was having a cocktail and telling a dirty joke on the phone to his buddy, you know. But Dungy said they respect where each other was coming from. Mm-hmm. They found common ground. They had a lot of fun together. So.
Well, I like the background you had on that very point. And it was an interesting point. You know, Dungy came from Noel, laid-back guy. Bruce Arians came from Bear Bryant, an in-your-face guy.
That's right.
So very interesting.
That's right. And Dungy would say how he talked to the guys in his room. He had a very talented group of defensive backs.
Very much so.
And Dungy mentioned one of his proudest moments, in the business of pro football. I think he was doing a game in Kansas City, or the NBC crew was in Kansas mm-hmm. City. And so on Saturday, they went to the stadium, you know, to see where they'd be sitting and get accustomed to it. And he looked up on the Ring of Honor, and he saw all four of his defensive backs.
Wow.
Albert Lewis.
Yeah.
Kevin Ross. Lloyd Burris. And there was another guy.
Guy played for Jacksonville at the end of his career? Thinking that right?
Maybe.
Did Albert Lewis play for Jacksonville? He had a defensive
back. No, he went to the Raiders.
I'm thinking they had a defensive back, and his name escapes me. That eventually wound up with Jacksonville. He might be a part owner of the Jaguars now, if I'm thinking correctly.
That might be Kevin Ross. That
might be Kevin Ross. Ross, okay.
So he was so proud that all four of his guys in that room ended up on the ring. Meanwhile, Arians was doing the running backs. Mm-hmm. He had the Nigerian Nightmare, who had some big years for Arians.
Was Natron Means there as well?
No.
Was there a guy that wound up in Pittsburgh?
Barry Wood.
Yeah.
Barry Wood. Who was number two, but also effective. I think a bigger mm-hmm. back. So Dungy is trying to teach, you know, technique to Kevin Ross. You know, you got to follow the quarterback's eyes or don't follow the quarterback. You know, really honing in on the details. And meanwhile, Arians is screaming at Okoye. Who knows how much English Okoye gets. and he's
what's that word mean?
Yeah. And he's telling him, whatever you do, you better not fumble. I'll get your ass out of this. I'll run your ass out of this town. Very different approaches, mm-hmm. like you were saying. Very different.
Well, I got a little background for you here. This will shock some readers, or listeners, I should say. Well, I hope you're readers, too. I hope you read JoeBucksFan.com. Early stages of my sports writing career. My first job was in St. Joseph, Missouri, which is a suburb of Kansas City, basically. Sort of what Bradenton is to Tampa. And I'd covered the Royals. And during the non-baseball season, Friday nights, I would do Friday night football, high school basketball. Saturdays and during the week, I would do small college sports.
JUCO, you know, maybe JUCO.
Not JUCO, but small college, like Northwest Missouri State, Carthage, there's a bunch of them. Matter of fact, Jason Light thinks, I talked to him about this once, he played for Nebraska Wesleyan. Light thinks I may have covered one of his games.
Not basketball.
No, college. Okay. College football. And so Saturdays, college football, I did small college. Saturdays, I would do college basketball during the basketball season and during the week. But baseball season, I'd do the Royals. Then once in a great while, they'd have me do sidebars with Chiefs games. And I regret not getting to know the Chiefs better. I never covered any training camp.
What year are we talking about?
Late 80s, 89, 90. But look at that coaching staff. Well, obviously, Schottenheimer was the head coach. Dungy was on that staff. Bill Cowher was on that staff.
Yes.
Herm Edwards was on that staff. Bruce Arians was on that staff. Is there any wonder why those guys won?
Yeah.
Holy cow, Schottenheimer did a really good job picking assistants.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, I mean, I knew who Dungy was, didn't know who Cowher was. I never talked to any of those guys. I didn't know who Arians was. And I really regret that these days. But a funny story is when I did sidebars in journalism jargon is like, you know, a small feature, not a game story, not a big feature, it's a small feature. So I did a sidebar, one of his last games, Steve Largent. You know, they're playing Seattle. That was in the AFC West at the time. I got three questions in with Largent, and he basically told us to go take a hike. I've got family. I got to get out of here. And he basically told us to, in a polite way.
Derek Thomas was on those teams, right?
Derek Thomas was on those teams. I didn't cover many Chiefs games, just a couple. But I regret not getting to know those assistant coaches or at least talking to them in, you know, 25, 30 years later. But what a coaching staff they had. Holy cow.
And if you're, you know, Lee, if you're doing a sidebar, you're not going to go talk to an assistant coach.
Never, no.
You're going to get one or two players.
Yeah.
And you're going to run back up to the press box.
Yeah.
And get
exactly,
your story.
Exactly. Yeah. So that's what I did. Like that one time, my sidebar was Steve Largent.
Dungy used the word straightforward four or five times in 45 minutes in describing Aaron. Straight shooter, straightforward. Look, Lee, you've monitored Arians to an incredible degree in the last 2 weeks. Every freaking interview he does, you're on it. And he doesn't have a great filter. By the way, Dungy said he's going to be fantastic for the media.
Oh, yeah?
For you and I. He says he's going to write your stories every day. And Dirk Carter, bless his heart, who's a good man and a decent man, he did not write our stories every day. He was pretty close to the vest, I thought.
He was not an extrovert, but here's the thing I'll say about
Dirk.
He
wasn't going to drop an F-bomb. Cutter wasn't.
And not necessarily. If he got, there's a couple times, you're right, that to me is not a story. But what I liked about Cutter, Shiano was the same way. Lovey just, you know, he would tell you to just get lost. Cutter and Shiano, and I think Raheem was this way too, but Raheem didn't like us and we didn't have credentials back then. He would help explain things, he being Cutter. Shiano would do the same thing too. When I would go to press conferences, I would learn from those guys. I would actually learn. They would take the time to explain things. I learned, and I respected that. Matter of fact, I enjoyed that because that's what we're there for, to learn.
I think Arians will be the same way in that regard.
Possibly, but he'll be more colorful. You know, when you said F-bombs, he'll be much more colorful.
Did you notice that, and I don't know if
much more of a personality.
I don't know if you saw it at the time in September, but it was... His regular season debut as a color analyst for CBS.
Oh, he slipped up, didn't he?
Yeah, some guy got open on the screen. He goes, that guy was wide-ass open. How can that happen? And then he immediately caught him. You know what? But on TV, it's too late.
It's gone.
So everybody made fun of Arians. But you know, that's Arians being us. It's Arians being us.
That's him being him. What does Dungy think of him as a coach? X's nose kind of guy.
Really knows his offense. Really knows how to move the football. Look what he did with Carson Palmer. Now, anybody could coach Larry Fitzgerald, but he had Michael Floyd, who never did anything when Arians, before or since, but was very productive with Arians. Look what he got. David Johnson was fantastic.
Even
now,
John
Brown. Now, he got hurt. He was the number one pick in fantasy leagues for about 2 years. The number one over Le'Veon Bell.
Wow.
So, now, one thing I noticed, I looked at Arians when he was... in charge of the running backs in KC. They had good teams, as you mentioned, good staffs. Okoye and Word, they never caught the ball.
Rarely.
They would catch 5 or 10 balls on the season.
Yeah.
So it's not like today's modern game where you throw to the backs, that the Kamaras, look what Belichick does with his back. The guy's catching 10 balls a game out of the backfield. You know what? Those guys move the chains.
Yes.
They move the chains, you know. And,
well, the backs Arians have in Kansas City, they're battering rams.
They were battering rams. So it's going to be interesting, you know. But he had a guy that did catch a lot of balls, but he wasn't a primary back. But he would kind of be the third down. You know who that guy was? Todd McNair.
Yeah.
Who I believe is on the Bucs staff now.
Mm-hmm.
But in Temple, at Kansas City, McNair would catch 40 or 50 balls. And he averaged 10 yards, which is a good average for a running back. But he wouldn't carry the ball. So he was a specialist. So I think you're going to see Arians, and I don't think it's going to be Jacquizz Rodgers. And I certainly don't think it's going to be Ronald Jones, and neither do you, in terms of that third down pass catching back, which is so prevalent in today's game, the Bucks are going to find that guy. I don't think he's on the roster right now.
That's an interesting point. You're right. Now, and I agree with you, by the way. I'm going to ask you this, Dungy's feedback here. You mentioned this in your column, and I hope people go to joebucksfan.com and read the Iris column. Great. One of your best columns. That was really fantastic. And I appreciate Dungy giving you and Martin the time where you got fodder for this column. Dungy talked about Arian's loyalty.
He did.
And almost all of his assistants have a connection with Arians. Not that, I mean, a tight connection. Not that, hey, I coached with you once upon a time.
This is a very juicy topic, Mr. DeKemper. I'm glad you brought it up. Lee, I got to be careful the way I say this. But amid all the euphoria, most of it well-deserved, about the Bucks' decision to hire a 66-year-old coach with a heck of a track record, the fact remains, Lee, he has stocked his staff with people that he's comfortable with and that he has confidence in. While there's a lot to be said for that, camaraderie, loyalty, you're not looking over your shoulder, does this guy have a different agenda? Lee, I think there's another side to that story, which is, are these the very best guys that Arians could have brought? We don't know that yet, but I think it's a legitimate question, an issue. I wouldn't say concern, but an issue for Buck fans, some of them who might be thinking, what's going on here? Did Arians take this job to help all his guys and his heart's not really in this job? Lee, I think we don't know the answer to that question right
now.
That's
true. I think it's a fair question. I don't know necessarily if it's quote-unquote setting his guys up, because I don't think Arians wants to go out as a loser. I really don't.
He's got a lot of pride.
Yes. However, in the vernacular of the current day America, let's be real here.
we're the only media in this town that is going to address this topic. Everybody else, they'd be scared. Oh, you can't bring this stuff.
Probably. And let's be real here, as the kids would say, and kids being guys in their 40s. We're coming off the heels of Cutter getting into trouble doing just that with Mike Smith.
Loyalty is a two-way.
Double-edged sword. Yeah. So,
look at Andy Reid with Sutton.
We finally fired him, yeah.
You know what, Lee? I'm going to throw this out at you. And I think you're going to agree with me. I'm not sure that was Reid's call. Just like I said with Cutter and Mike Smith. I'm not sure it was Cutter's call to finally pull the ball. I don't think he wanted to do it. And I think left to his own devices with no pressure, I'm not sure he would have done it. I'm not sure.
Interesting.
And I feel the same way about Reid and Sutton.
Well, the thing with the difference is, to be pro Arians here, the difference between him bringing in Todd Bowles and Cutter bringing in Mike Smith. Mike Smith, there was a huge gap between him being a defensive coordinator for the Bucks and him being a defensive coordinator for the Jaguars. There was a huge gap there. Bowles is only, 4 years removed from being defensive coordinator? And the Jets, I've heard a lot. People who are inside the NFL, guys like Michael Lombardi and people like that, outspoken guys, they aren't scared to call a spade a spade. They kind of felt bad for Bowles. Granted, he didn't do a good job with the Jets, but they're saying he really
didn't. An unwinnable position.
He didn't have talent to work with.
Yeah.
And their defenses weren't that awful. So I don't think it's fair to compare. I mean, it's a fair question to say, hey, you're just setting up all your buddies here.
And Bowles has history in Arizona of being a very good defensive
coordinator. Yes, exactly. So while it's a fair question, I don't know if it's a fair comparison to compare Bowles to Mike Smith. Fair question.
Leftwich is more of a fair comparison. He doesn't have a long track record.
No, he does not.
Especially calling plays.
No, he does not. However, and Arians has broached this subject before. He was asked, hey, Leftwich only has, half a year calling plays? And Arians said, well, first off, I train this guy, number one. Number two, I know him. Number three, I'm going to be in his ear. So, Cutter was detached from the defense.
That's a good point.
Arians is not. Arians said, I'm going to be in his ear. I'm going to be right by the guy. So he's going to be fully involved with Leftwich, whereas Cutter was not fully, or just the opposite. He was not involved whatsoever with Smith. So while the questions are fair, I don't know if the comparisons are fair. We shall see.
Dungy brought up a point, Lee. He said, I'm not sure what the Bucks strategy, by Bucks strategy, he means as an organizational standpoint, almost from an ownership standpoint. What is the strategy? Is it, and Dungy said it, you know, is it that Arians is going to be here for two, maybe 3 years, and then pick his successor and walk off into the sunset? Dungy doesn't know. And what, you know what? You and I don't know at this point.
I don't know, but I'd be willing to lay cash. The next coach of the Buccaneers is already on staff.
That's not a bad way to put it. If they're successful, Lee.
Oh, sure. If they're not successful, they're going to clean house. Yeah, exactly. I mean, if they're successful, I'm sure this conversation's already come up. Bruce, you're only going to be here 3 or 4 years. We signed you a 4-year contract. You're 66. You had health problems. I mean, it's almost irresponsible not to have a succession in place. And I'm sure Arians wanted to, as you pointed out earlier, to set up his own guys. So I'm sure this conversation has taken place, took place before he signed the contract. If they're successful, whether it be Bowles, whether it be Goodwin, Leftwich even. I've talked to, I don't know if you know him, Emory Hunt, the czar of the playbook. And I asked him, I said, do you think Goodwin or Bowles is already the de facto coach in waiting for the Bucs? He said, don't forget Leftwich. I said, really, Leftwich?
I think Leftwich or Goodwin have a better chance than Bowles. I think he have a better chance.
Probably. And I was surprised when he said Leftwich. And I said, really, Leftwich? He goes, well, think about it. Look what's happened in the NFL today. Guys that have no NFL experience are getting head coaching jobs. Kingsbury, for example. Well, if Leftwich has success and he's already got experience as offensive coordinator, he'll probably get that job or at least be in consideration. And I didn't think of it that way. That's
imagine
a good point.
That 10 years ago, we're talking about a guy who started for the Bucs in 09 while Josh Freeman was getting his feet wet as a rookie. And we had Leftwich all that season. And I remember him as a sharp guy, Lee. Sharp guy.
Well, here's the story with Leftwich when he was starting for the Bucs.
And it was 3 games? 3 games.
Yeah, 3 games. This is a preseason game. And it wasn't anything Leftwich said, at least to reporters. It was after the first game they were playing up at Tennessee.
So you guys were alive and kicking in 09?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. '08 we started. August of 08. Chucky's last year. So 09, preseason game on the road in Tennessee. You know, the debut of Josh Freeman. I was very critical of the pick of Freeman. Very critical. You know, I didn't think he did anything at Kansas State. I thought he was way overdrafted. Well, when I first laid eyes on him in a game, I'm like, okay, I can understand where Dominic's coming from. He had the look of a franchise quarterback.
Big arm.
He had the look once. Okay, I sort of understand. But anyway, after the game, I personally went to talk to Freeman before he got to the podium. And I went to talk to Freeman right after, I mean, as soon as they opened up the locker room, guys weren't even undressed yet, hadn't hit the shower yet. I asked Freeman a question. He started responding, and Leftwich turned around and grabbed his arm and kind of like, hold on, you'll go to the podium. They can ask you questions when you get there. Don't worry about it.
Was your first meeting with Leftwich, he pissed you off that
no,
day?
No, he didn't. I was actually impressed.
You had an exclusive, and he screwed you.
I didn't really think so. I was actually impressed. Like, this is a big brother. Because he clearly was there to bridge the gap between nobody, because they got rid of Jeff Garcia.
And Freeman didn't know the protocol. He was ready to gab with
him. And so it was like a big brother showing him the ropes. So I was actually impressed. He didn't say anything except to tell Freeman, hold on, you talk to them later when you go to the podium. That's their time. So I was actually, that was my biggest memory of Leftwich as a quarterback.
I want to get back to Bowles for a second, Lee. Ask Dungy about, of course, Dungy with his defensive pedigree, watches all the defensive trends in the league, all the defensive coaches. Ask him about a Bowles defense. First word he used, pressure, aggressive. Two words we never used. With Mike Smith's system. We never used it, Lee.
But there was a key word we used with Mike Smith's system. Passive.
I was going to say soft. You said passive. That's a better word. Passive. Okay, so pressure and aggressive. Then, Lee, I asked him the million-dollar question as far as Buck fans are concerned. Do you see the Bucks going to a three-man front either as a base or as an alignment that's going to be used quite often? Dungy said, and surprised me with it, because I've been saying I think they are going to a three-man, which would be the first time in 30 years, basically, that the Bucks would be using that. It was the last year of Perkins. And Dungy said, looking at their roster, and I think he said specifically the guys up front. He didn't say the linebackers. Mm-hmm. Specifically the guys up front. He said, I don't think so. So I was thinking Vita Vea as the nose tackle, JPP as one of the ends, but, you know, Dungy's looking at it in a different way. He doesn't think they have. He doesn't think the three-man front would be the scheme that takes advantage of it. Now, Lee, we know one thing. This roster is going to be turned over. So
yeah.
don't go in thinking Bo Allen and, Vinnie Curry and then Golston. No. Those days are over. There's going to be a big churn, including up front. You're going to get the guys that Todd Bowles wants on that defense.
Mm-hmm.
On offense, you're going to get the guys that Bruce Arians wants for the most part. I told you they replaced 15 to 22 starters. When he hit the desert, it was a desert storm. That's what it was. So we could see the same thing in Tampa. We could.
And I think you should. I mean, this team's
maybe
been
we
losing
should.
So much.
Yeah. Maybe we should.
I think Golston's gone. I think Curry is probably gone. I think Bo Allen's gone. I think
on
Mitch
Ryan.
Online. Who?
Yeah.
I think he's gone. Now, interesting you bring up Dungy talk about four-man front. And three-man, but the four-man front. He's not the only guy saying that. I was listening to your friend and ours, Pat Kerwin, on NFL Radio, Sirius NFL Radio, yesterday or Tuesday. I can't remember
moving
which it was.
Moving the chains.
And he wasn't talking about the Bucs, but someone asked him about a new defensive coordinator coming in who's got a 3-4 background, and are they going to change the defense to a three-man front? Kerwin said something very interesting. He goes, you know what? I quit getting hung up on the fronts. The three-man front, the four-man front. He goes, guys, today, he goes, they're hybrids. He goes, a guy is supposed to be a three-man front. They're actually four-man fronts, the way they use the linebacker. He goes, if you look at the roster, it says a rush linebacker. He goes, there really is no such thing as a three-man front or a four-man front anymore. It's all hybrid. He goes, I don't get hung up on the schemes anymore. So that's very interesting. And Ian Beckles, on his podcast, In the Trenches, he claims he heard Arians say, we're one gap. He goes, that means a four-man front. And that's coming from a guard, a guy who was in the trenches himself. So that's very interesting you brought that up with Dungy because other people are saying the same thing.
You know, Lee, another way to look at it is you look at the linebackers. Do they have four linebackers that can play those roles, the edge rushers and the two run stuffers in the middle?
2 years ago, I would have said yes.
I think they're better off in the run stuffers in the middle than they are as the edge rushers.
Well, I think linebackers is a bigger question mark than what it was. 2 years ago, I would say yes, they had the linebackers. Now, I don't know.
You got to have a D Ford or a Justin Houston, like the Chiefs play that 3-4. You got to have the edge guy.
In theory, Noah Spence is going to be that. So I don't know. I don't know what to make of Noah Spence.
Lock the proof.
Yeah, I don't know what to make of Noah Spence, but it's a do or die year for him. They're not going to give him another year. You know.
Jason Light wants him on this team. There's no question about that.
Well, to save his save his derriere. That's why. But I don't know what to think of Noah Spence. You know, one time I thought he could have been an outside linebacker in a three-man front. I don't know anymore. Beckwith. Who knows if he's ever going to play again? Kwan's another question mark.
By the way, I like all the tweets from Kwan that shows how hard he's rehabbing. I like it.
I'm going to quote Bernie Miklotz, your friend and mine. Bernie Miklotz of St. Louis, used to be a St. Louis Post Dispatch, longtime NFL guy. He wrote this column last year about so-and-so works hard. He goes, and this is about the baseball Cardinals, by the way. He goes, shouldn't that be the bare minimum of a professional athlete that he works hard? You're getting paid how many millions of dollars? That should be the absolute lowest common denominator. A guy should work hard. Don't be this crap, he's working hard.
Well, I guess my interpretation of some of the tweets is that he's making progress. Now, maybe that's a reach.
We don't know.
But you don't know. You don't know.
Only the medical people know that.
I'm going to stick with my...
Now, I hope he comes back, and I hope he's...
I think he's going to be back on this roster.
Here's the thing I love about Kwan.
I don't want to give up on a young guy like that.
Here's the positives about Kwan.
Can refine his game.
Hopefully. He has heart. You can't replace that. We know he's a team guy. You can't replace that. So we know his heart and his head's in the right place.
And the other players gravitate towards him.
It seems that way. But, you know, again, the NFL, it's not college, not high school. It's not about getting trophies, except the Super Bowl trophy. It's about production. As Dirk Cutter said over and over again, it's a production business. I love Kwan. I love what he stands for. Love his heart. Love his spirit. Love that he's a team guy. He's one of the few guys that absolutely backed Roberto Aguayo. He would go up and hug Aguayo. I mean, you love to have that kind of guy on your team, but at the end of the day, it's about production.
Not like that clown Baker, who...
complete opposite.
Remember when they were doing the kicking competition and then the guy was rooting against people? I mean...
I got a lot of things. I'm anti-Baker. That wasn't one of them. I mean,
you thought he did it playfully.
I don't know if he did it playfully. I thought, you know, he was, and he said this. He's like, hey, if he can't handle stress in a practice, yeah, how's he going to handle stress in the game? So I that didn't bother me that much. The trade deal, that was, horrible. And then, obviously, we can talk on and on about the nonsense that Baker did.
I guess I didn't look at it as an isolated inside trade. When you put it in context with all the other shenanigans, I thought it was another example. But you're right. Somebody else do that, you don't even think twice about it.
Yeah, that's it. Exactly. Now, if Kwan did that, you wouldn't say anything about it. Because we all know where Kwan comes from.
I was talking, Lee, to a former Buck, and we were talking about Grimes. And I said, with the stuff from Miko that's come out, I said, he's got to retire. He's got to be thinking about it. Nobody wants him. And the guy agreed with me. He says, he's got to hang it up.
He doomed himself.
Got to hang it up. You don't say that stuff if you're not going to retire.
I know. He put a dagger in his own career, I think. Who's going to pick him up if you don't know if he's going to be motivated to cover a guy? You know, it almost sounded like, I hate to say it, I like Brett. I get along with Miko. Miko's social media personality, and you met her before, her social media personality is completely opposite than what she is in real life. I think almost like it's a shtick. I really do. However, having said that, you know, Miko, what are you doing? Beckles thinks that Miko goaded Brent to do that. I don't know if that's the case or not. He's done.
I used to see Lee.
And I like both of them, so I was really disappointed to hear that.
Home games, I would go downstairs, maybe 3 minutes left, and I'd go to the hospitality room where a lot of players in there. And his mom was down there.
Yeah.
And I'd watch the last minute or two off TV. And his mom was down there, got to know her, and saw her after the last game of the year, which Grimes played well.
Yeah, he did.
Against Atlanta. And she reiterated three different times in the last few weeks of that season, the last season, you know, I want him to retire. I want him to retire. We got homes here. We got homes here. We got all the money we need. Let him go out while he's healthy. I think that's what's going to happen. And now, Lee, I think the difference is I don't think it's his choice anymore. I think you look around and, you know,
the proverbial he made
from the minimum. I mean, you know,
the proverbial made his own bed, unfortunately. And I hate to see a guy do that to his career, because you know what? That's what people are going to remember him as.
He had a distinguished career.
You know, Miko, she made some interesting points. I don't know if he'll ever be a Hall of Fame player, but his resume is pretty darn good. But he's going to be remembered for what he said, his last comments probably at the NFL player. And I hate to see that. I'm not one of these people that I expect someone to believe everything I believe politically. That's idiotic, I think. So, you know, we're Americans. We have a right to disagree on whatever we, you know, whatever we believe. I got along with her. I like Miko. Do I agree with what she said a lot of the time? No, but I liked her. And she always seemed to have his best...
interest.
Yes, best interest in mind.
Wait, I'm going to throw out one more topic. Quick.
Well, I've got another topic too, but go ahead.
All right, I'll throw mine out quickly to you.
Two topics, actually.
Okay. Yes or no? If it can be worked out salary-wise, contract-wise, yes or no, you would bring Ryan Fitzpatrick back as Winston's backup? Yes or no?
No.
My answer is also no.
And I think
I don't like the dynamics there at this point.
Yeah, I think both of us are heading down the same road. We're just using a different lane. The reason why I wouldn't, you know, how many times has Arian said this is Jameis' team? He doesn't want Jameis looking over his shoulder? Well, that's why you get rid of Fitzpatrick. Cuts him loose. That way Jameis doesn't have to worry about, well, is Fitzpatrick going to come in if I throw another pick or if I throw an incompletion? Is that what you were saying?
Would you replace him with another veteran quarterback? A veteran quarterback? Or would you go with three quarterbacks, one young guy, and a veteran behind Winston? Maybe a guy on a practice squad?
I think it'd be smart to have another veteran. Unfortunately, the last 2 years, you know, whether it's on the field or off the field, Jameis didn't play a full season.
You mean like a Blaine Gabbert or something like that?
Yeah. You know, how many games did Jameis miss because he had his hurt shoulder?
Now, where you and I disagree is I would pick a quarterback in the middle rounds, and you think that's a wasted pick. I don't think it's a wasted pick. I think
it's a wasted pick because
if it's a guy that Arians wants and thinks he can develop, that's not a wasted pick.
Well, that's just it. Arians, I don't think, is interested in developing anyone. He, you know, it's win now. He's only got, I think we both agreed, 3, maybe 4 years. So,
but you don't know for sure that the Winston experiment's going to be a success. You don't know that.
If it's not a success, he'll go out and buy a free agent, then draft somebody.
Not easy to buy a free agent quarterback. Not easy.
Well, you know, there's quarterbacks out there. I mean, not a successful one, yes.
But if you're going to go out and draft a guy that successful, and quote unquote, he's not going to be around much longer. He's, you know, it's a stopgap. Let's be honest here. There's two really, really, really good quarterbacks coming up in the next couple of drafts. Really good quarterbacks. So
now you're assuming that, you know, you got to go 5-11 to get a shot at those guys.
Worse, probably.
You know,
you got to do the Gil Brandt. You got to stock up on draft picks.
So we're both no on Fitzpatrick.
Exactly. You're going down the same road, but in a different lane.
He could retire. And he could retire.
He very well possibly could, yeah.
All right, what's your topic?
Well, it's actually two of them. One is Jameis. While I'm thinking about it, I'll bring it up. Jeff Cameron, our friend who works up at ESPN Tallahassee, he said something recently on his radio show that I never thought of before, and it was very interesting. Now, Steve and I both came to the conclusion at the same time that when Jameis regained his starting spot, he's a changed man. I considered him neutered by Cutter, and I really didn't like the new Jameis. Cameron, who, you know, he's a Jameis honk like I am.
You're talking about his off-field persona. You're not talking about his play, necessarily.
They're lying here. In this subject, they're lying. I didn't like his new persona. I thought he was neutered. I wanted the gunslinger. And I thought that reflected in his play that it was boring. It was ordinary. It was blah. Cameron, on the other hand, again, he's a Jameis honk, like I am. I admit, I'm a Jameis honk. I want him to succeed. Cameron, on the other hand, loved the new Jameis. He says that's the quarterback you want, a guy that's emotionally in control. He's not getting out of hand. He's not losing his focus. Instead of worrying about the last play, which he claimed Jameis was too much, he's worried about the next play. And he said, that's the quarterback that will get you to the playoffs. That's the quarterback that's in control. That's the quarterback that's a leader on the field. Your take on that?
Well, there's some disparate, one of your words, disparate. First, I thought you were talking about his demeanor at the podium.
Yes, I am.
Which changed.
Yes.
No question. Much more careful.
Guarded almost.
You know, a filter.
Yes.
He didn't have that big a filter before that. As far as his play, Lee, I go back to the great quote from Arians. You might ask the question when they brought him into the media room after his press conference. Bruce, can you deal with Jameis throwing some interceptions? He goes, one. He goes, you throw three, you're going to get beat.
That's actually Mark Cook.
Yeah, that's a fabulous answer.
One.
Yeah, one.
He looked at Cook with his astonished face.
Now,
one.
Having said that, Lee, I don't think all of a sudden you're going to see Arians try to turn Winston into Alex Smith, nor should he. You didn't draft him number one overall to be Alex Smith, to be his, quote, game manager. You didn't. That's just a fact. He can be a gunslinger, but at the same time, he can learn to control his emotions and overcome his penchant for miscues.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think they're mutually exclusive. This is still going to be a down-the-field throwing offense. This is not going to be dink and dunk. That's not Bruce Arians.
Think Cameron's on to something?
I think he's on to something.
Okay.
And he's got pipelines that you and I don't have.
Yeah.
And you put a lot of stock in Cameron.
I know his pipeline.
He's steered you right over the years.
Oh, yeah.
He's steered you.
Jeff's been very good to us. And I hope we've been good to him, and hopefully we can get the Scuttlebucks back next season.
We got to get that going.
Him and Tom Lang.
I think it's really going to help Winston's psyche to know without a shred of a doubt, Arians is in his corner.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Not that Cutter was against him. Not that Cutter thought the guy was a bum, but he had a little bit of a frayed relationship, especially towards the end.
Mm-hmm.
With Cutter lost faith in him, obviously, in midseason. And I don't blame Cutter after that Cincinnati game. Neither do you.
Yeah.
I thought he should have put him back earlier than he did.
Yeah, the Giants, he should have started thinking.
But Arians is an unabashed Winston guy and doesn't mind saying it.
Mm-hmm.
That's got to help Winston.
That doesn't mean he's going to give him carte blanche.
That's right.
Yeah, he's going to be in his face, but he's behind him. The last subject here, Mike Evans at the Pro Bowl. You know, Steve talked to him, Steve Esvitz, my cohort at JoeBucksFan.com, the brains behind JoeBucksFan.com.
What are we, the brawn over there, really?
I don't know what I am. I'm the hanger on, I think.
Yeah, there you go.
Evans said he hasn't talked to Arians yet. What do you make of that? Arguably his best player on offense.
My information is that Arians has been swamped in terms of relocation, getting a house. I mean, there's a lot of stuff going on in Arian's life. That's probably why he didn't go to Senior Bowl.
Yeah.
You know, there's too much going on. He's in Tampa. He's out of Tampa. He's closing a house over there. I'm going to give him a pass. You and I have no reason to think, and it would be silly to think that Bruce Arians isn't a Mike Evans fan.
I'm not suggesting that, but Arians was saying, I'm going to talk to these players. I had been told by a Bucs official that he was going to talk to all the players. And then your best offensive player, and you haven't talked to him yet? You've been here, 3 weeks?
Wouldn't lose a week of sleep if I'm a Buc fan. Lose 1 week of sleep. Mike Evans is going to get the call. After
Texas.
He calls Evans, he's going to call you, DeKemper. And he's going to give you a pep talk.
Well, I hope he invites me over for a beer.
There you go.
We got to get out of here, Ira. Any final thoughts?
We're going to get out of here next week. We're going to do our two podcasts before I go to Atlanta. One of them is going to be centered on John Lynch. I'll give some behind-the-scenes stuff about what's going on with his chances. And I'm starting to get a little bit encouraged. I don't want to get overconfident. But if you would have asked me a month ago, I would have said, boy, this is, in the words of Lovie Smith, tough duty, tough duty. And now I see a little light, a little bit of light of tunnel. And then we'll get the latest Buc developments next week. Izbits will be back late, but you did a good job today. And have a good weekend, Buc fans.